This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Pariskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Mathalul ladheena yunfiquna amwalahum fi sabeelillah كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of a grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every year. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the U.S. return to the JCPOA would be meaningful if anti-Tehran sanctions are lifted. A new poll shows nearly 60% of Americans favor immediate removal of President Trump from office as Democrats push for his impeachment over the violence at the Capitol. Also ahead, China and Australia tighten coronavirus-related restrictions in several cities to contain new outbreaks of infections. It's good to have you with us. Our top story, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says anti-Iran sanctions must be immediately removed. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says the sanctions are vicious and a crime against the Iranian nation.
On Friday, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, came down hard on the United States and its allies over their years-long sanctions against the Iranian people. Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that the measures are based on a baseless animosity and have to be lifted right away. Iran's leader noted that setting conditions for the removal of sanctions is nonsense. He said a possible U.S. return to the 2015 nuclear deal would be meaningless if the sanctions stay in place. Ayatollah Khamenei threw his weight behind a recent move by the Iranian government to scale down its commitments under the deal known as the JCPOA, saying that Tehran will not accept any obligations without reciprocal measures, adding that it would be meaningless for the Islamic Republic to implement all its commitments under the JCPOA when the other side implements almost none of its. Ayatollah Khamenei slammed comments made by some Western countries over Iran's regional policies. He stressed that Tehran will continue to play its role for regional stability, like its recent contribution to Iraq and Syria that led to the defeat of the Daesh terrorist group there. The Iran leader said that it is the U.S. that finds its interest in destabilizing the region, noting that such plots have been explicitly stated by some American thinkers, including someone from the American Enterprise Institute. Speaking on Iran's defense capabilities, Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the country is strong enough now to deter a war similar to the one launched by former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein with arms and backing of the West in the 1980s. Iran's leader then touched upon recent developments surrounding the U.S. presidential election, saying the so-called American values and democracy have turned into a laughingstock even among American friends. He said what happened in Washington, D.C. was the very thing Americans were planning to incite in Iran over a decade ago.
Iran's foreign minister takes a jab at European countries for their double standards in condemning what he called US President Donald Trump's assault on the rule of law.
Those who succumbed to Trump's lawless bullying for 4 years to protect their skin at our people's expense now condemn his assault on the rule of law, but still try to use his economic terrorism against Iran as leverage.
Zarif said European countries should grow a spine to stand up against Trump's lawless conduct against Iran. Tehran has repeatedly called on the European parties to the Iran nuclear deal to fulfill their commitments after Washington's unilateral withdrawal from the agreement in 2018. Iran started to scale back its commitments under the accord when the European signatories failed to meet their end of the deal under US pressure. Iran says the European Union's mere talk of support for the agreement is not enough and that the bloc needs to compensate for the US withdrawal. Political commentator Lawrence Davidson says the US return to the Iran nuclear deal would not be difficult under the Biden administration.
And the more Trump disgraces himself, or his, you can see him in disgrace, the easier it'll be for Biden to rid the country of his policies or change his policies. That certainly is going to be the case domestically, and it might very well carry over into foreign policy. So my feeling is that when the Iranian representatives meet with Biden's representatives, shall we say, it's a new ball game. And I don't think that it's going to be particularly difficult to get back to the original agreement if that's what the Iranians want. The Europeans will change their tune as well, because the type of pressure that's going to be on them will change with the Biden administration.
Elsewhere, the Attorney General's office in the U.S. state of Colorado has opened a grand jury investigation into the 2019 death of African-American Elijah McClain in police custody. In a statement, State Attorney General Phil Weiser said he wants to conduct an independent probe based on facts and law into the incident. 23-year-old McClain was confronted by police while walking home based on a report that he was suspicious. He died days later after being placed in a chokehold. The three officers involved in the encounter did not face any charges. McClain's death attracted renewed attention after the police killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis last summer. The killing sparked nationwide protests demanding an end to police brutality against the blacks and justice for the victims. Staying in the U.S., where House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has called on President Donald Trump to resign or face impeachment. Pelosi said she has instructed the House Rules Committee to move forward with a motion for impeachment if Trump does not leave office voluntarily. Pelosi said in a statement after a three-hour meeting with House Democrats that the lawmakers will preserve every option, including Amendment 25, which deals with presidential succession and disability. The Democratic representatives have reportedly prepared a draft article of impeachment against Trump. U.S. media say the draft accuses Trump of engaging in high crimes and misdemeanors by inciting insurrection. Meanwhile, the U.S. president-elect has called Trump one of the most incompetent presidents in the history of the United States.
I've been saying for now well over a year, he is not fit to serve. He is not fit to serve. He's one of the most incompetent presidents in the history of the United States of America.
Joe Biden said people who stormed the Capitol should be prosecuted. Biden also welcomed Trump's announcement that he won't attend the January 20 presidential inauguration. He stressed that he has confidence in the country's Secret Service to make sure his inauguration goes off safely. On Wednesday, Trump's supporters stormed the Congress building in a bid to overturn his election defeat. Twitter has permanently suspended U.S. President Donald Trump's account, citing the risk of further incitement of violence. Twitter said the move was made after a close review of recent tweets on Trump's account and the context around them. It said two of the president's tweets violated the company's policy against glorification of violence. Twitter had initially blocked Trump's account temporarily following the siege of the Capitol Hill. A new opinion poll says more than half of Americans want President Trump to be immediately removed from office over the deadly unrest on Capitol Hill. According to the Reuters Ipsos poll, 7 out of 10 of those who voted for Trump in November opposed the storming of the Capitol grounds. Nearly 70% of Americans surveyed also said they disapprove of Trump's actions in the run-up to the assault. 5 people were killed when Trump's supporters overran the U.S. Congress on Wednesday. So, the United States is still in shock a few days after the U.S. Congress came under attack by a large number of supporters of President Donald Trump. The storming of the Capitol exposes deep-rooted divisions and a serious lack of trust among Americans.
The United States is still reeling from what happened at the heart of the American democracy in the capital of the nation on Wednesday. The unprecedented chaos in Washington, D.C. has been described by many as a shattering blow to the image of America. The extent of polarization of the American society was on full display on Wednesday. Supporters of outgoing President Donald Trump, encouraged by him, marched to the Capitol building as the Congress was meeting to confirm Joe Biden's election victory. Chaotic scenes erupted as Trump supporters clashed with security forces and stormed the Capitol building. The violent mayhem temporarily blocked the counting of the Electoral College votes. Several people lost their lives inside and outside the Congress building. Trump, who has repeated claims of a stolen election, was widely condemned for inciting violence in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday.
What led to this one has been, in terms of its most recent context, 4 years of Donald Trump and Donald Trump lying to the American people about a number of things, but most recently lying to the American people about the election and the fact that that he won in his mind.
The storming of the Capitol building triggered a number of resignations from Trump's team less than 2 weeks before the outgoing president's term will be over. Meanwhile, senior Democrats are calling for Trump to be removed immediately. They want him to be forced out of office now, either under the disability clause of the 25th Amendment or through an impeachment. 4 years of Trump's divisive presidency seems to have fueled different divisions in the American society to an unprecedented level.
Trump knows all too well that he will have to leave the White House soon, but he still insists on massive fraud that led to Biden's victory in the November election. That's what Trump told his supporters in Washington again this week before they stormed the Capitol building. Under immense pressure from Democrats and fellow Republicans, Trump has now committed to an orderly transition of power on January the 20th. What's the toughest task facing Trump's successor? There are many challenges facing Biden, to be fair, but a divided America is perhaps the toughest of them all.
The unprecedented violence in Washington, D.C. will undoubtedly be hard for America to recover from. Soon after the storming of the Capitol building by his supporters, Trump committed to an orderly transition of power later this month. But the damage is done. The bitter developments of this week seem to have hugely dented the credibility of America's democracy. Meanwhile, Wednesday's events in Washington drew reactions from around the world. Some countries went so far as to say that the chaos exposed internal collapse in the American political system and that the events showed Western democracy is fragile and broken.
America has been championing this fraud that America is the, as Ronald Reagan said, the shining city on the hill, and we profess to be the bastion of democracy, but the best way that America seems to be able to bring democracy to other places is at the barrel of a gun. And so what I honestly believe that this has done is it has exposed the hypocrisy of America.
American officials have long lectured the leaders of other countries on democratic values and peaceful transfer of power from one elected president to another. Americans have been very proud of peaceful and smooth handover of government every 4 years, but that did not happen this time. Some observers believe the post-election chaos in the United States shows a growing lack of trust in the system and elections. One recent opinion poll shows more than half of Republican voters believe Trump rightfully won the election. That's tens of millions of Americans that don't trust the election result. The incoming administration of Joe Biden will face many domestic and foreign challenges. But right now, perhaps leading a divided America will probably be the toughest task facing the future president of the United States.
Defend the Constitution.
China has tightened restrictions following a new outbreak of COVID-19 infections in its northern province. A spike in Hebei, bordering the capital Beijing, sparked fresh lockdowns ahead of the Lunar New Year next month. Hebei reported over 130 new cases in the past week, with more than 200 infections. Authorities have warned that the upcoming New Year festivities will further boost the risk of transmission. Meanwhile, Australia is on high alert after cases of highly transmissible new COVID variants have been detected in the country. It has imposed a three-day strict lockdown on the third largest city, Brisbane. The discovery of the new strain has cut the number of travellers from overseas and requires negative COVID-19 tests from those boarding planes. Australia has recorded around 28,000 infections and 909 deaths since the start of the pandemic. North Korea's leader says Washington's hostile policies towards Pyongyang would never change regardless of who occupies the White House. Kim Jong-un called the United States the biggest enemy of North Korea and an obstacle to its development. Kim said North Korea's political activity should be focused and redirected at subduing the U.S. policies. He also called for more research and development of advanced military equipment, as well as expansion of the country's nuclear capabilities. Kim, however, stressed that his country will never misuse its nuclear power. North Korea says its nuclear program is a strong deterrent against U.S. military threats. Talks aimed at denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula have been stalled for months over Washington's refusal to meet Pyongyang's demand for sanctions relief. Our Seoul correspondent Jennifer Chang says North Korea's nuclear capabilities give Pyongyang the upper hand in any future talks with the United States, should they happen.
Right now, the hopes in the U.S. were that the North would be more conciliatory. After all, the U.S. President-elect Biden has said that he is willing to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and try to work out a deal, another nuclear deal, And he has taken quite a conciliatory approach, but the North is adamant that the U.S. must first drop its hostile policy toward North Korea. The North is really a strong player on the world scene in terms of being a nuclear power. It's only one of four nuclear powers, U.S., China, Russia, and North Korea. One of the four superpowers in nuclear terms. Only China, Russia, and North Korea can hit the U.S. with a nuclear-tipped missile. So the North is going to have the upper hand at the bargaining table with the new U.S. President, Joe Biden.
That brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
in the limelight.
Technology as a long-term solution has the potential to reshape entire industries and create durable change across countries and continents. And smart technology today holds the potential for meaningful effects on hundreds of millions in need in almost every sector. Some fields present today tremendous opportunities for change and impact that can be reached with smart investment and advanced technologies. The subject on everybody's mind due to the coronavirus pandemic is healthcare. And while vast financial aid could fix short-term problems and save millions of lives, technology advancements are crucial for the long run. Sub-Saharan Africa suffers from the lowest number of doctors per capita, with only 0.234 for every 1,000 people, less than one-sixth of the world's average. Health centers across the region lack the most basic infrastructure, including mains electricity and running water. Investing in medical technology should include the use of solar power as a catalyzer for infrastructure solutions alongside solar-based medical equipment. By establishing proper infrastructure, 98,745 health centers that are currently serving over 600 million people in Africa would be able to provide appropriate care, and millions of lives would be saved. The article you're about to hear has been written by Yariv Cohen, an impact investor and executive focusing on value-added businesses and technologies targeted at the developing world. The piece is titled Extreme Poverty on the Rise for the First Time in 23 Years, Technology the Only Long-Term Solution. The article was published by the Rwandan newspaper, The New Times. Stay with us for more of Yariv Cohen's article. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres a few weeks ago said conflicts, climate change and COVID-19 have created the greatest humanitarian challenge since the Second World War. Guterres added, together we must mobilize resources and stand in solidarity with people in their darkest hour of need. And there will be, in fact, many in need. The World Bank expects that by the end of 2021, real gross domestic product per capita in sub-Saharan Africa will likely regress to the same level as 2007. The outcomes of the financial crisis are already visible, with extreme poverty on the rise for the first time in 23 years. Up to 150 million people could enter the extreme poverty statistics by the end of 2021, with the largest increases projected in Southern Asia and sub-Saharan Africa. Rising humanitarian aid costs set to reach $35 billion in 2021. The funds will be crucial for hundreds of millions in need of life-saving support that includes food, shelter, medical assistance, and much more. And while humanitarian aid is crucial, investment in life-enabling technologies is a key factor in establishing an infrastructure that would enable a brighter future, a decrease in poverty, better healthcare for all, and education for all, and much more. Technology as a long-term solution has the potential to reshape entire industries and create durable change across countries and across continents. And whilst technology today holds the potential for meaningful effects on hundreds of millions in need in almost every sector, some fields present today tremendous opportunities for change and impact and can be reached with smart investment and advanced technologies. The subject on everybody's mind due to the coronavirus pandemic is healthcare. And while vast financial aid could fix short-term problems and save millions of lives, technology advancements are crucial for the long run. Sub-Saharan Africa suffers from the lowest number of doctors per capita, with only 0.234 for every 1,000 people, less than one-sixth of the world's average. Health centers across Africa lack the most basic infrastructure, including mains electricity and running water. Investing in medical technology should include the use of solar power as a catalyzer for infrastructure solutions alongside solar-based medical equipment. By establishing proper infrastructure, 98,745 healthcare centers in sub-Saharan Africa that are currently serving over 600 million people would be able to provide appropriate care, and millions of lives would be saved. Across Africa, around 250 million children have been out of school since lockdowns began in the early months of 2020. A UNICEF report from August alerts that the poorest populations and children from rural areas of the sub-Saharan region are by far the most likely to suffer education loss due to lack of access to remote learning. And missing school has vast effects other than education being lost. Girls who are expected to take on household chores are very likely to stay at home even once school is back, further widening the gender gap. Violence rates against children have increased, and nutrition rates are down with millions of children missing school meals. Connectivity is the first step in establishing advanced infrastructure for remote education and could be reached through satellite-based solutions that are affordable and perfect for inaccessible locations. Solar-based solutions are the next step. With television and tablets that are chargeable by solar power performing as the education tools for remote learning. These solutions are essential during lockdowns, but are also the basis for larger involvement and engagement of children in the learning experience. Hunger is also on the rise, and the number of acutely food insecure people could reach 270 million by 2021. Movement restrictions coincided with planting periods for most of the staple crops in the sub-Saharan Africa region, leading to food security challenges exacerbating even further in the coming months. Solar solutions are the most affordable way to address food insecurity across community and national levels. With only 6% of agricultural lands properly irrigated, most farmers across Africa rely on rainwater or manual irrigation systems, and millions of acres of land are not reaching their full crop potential. Solar irrigation is a prominent solution, and affordable financing models are paving the way for local small farm owners to irrigate their crops and reach as much as three times more yields. Smallholder farms constitute 80% of all farms in sub-Saharan Africa, employing about 175 million people directly and contributing as much as 90% of the food in the region. Imagine the change that three times the crops could establish. 2020 will forever be written in history books as the year of the COVID-19 pandemic. What began as a mysterious virus in Wuhan, China in late 2019 quickly spread across the entire globe, leaving no continent, country or community untouched, creating economic and humanitarian damage on a historic scale. COVID-19 is still everywhere, and its effects are projected to continue disrupting billions of lives for years and even decades to come. As the situation escalates and added effects unfold, so rises the need for contribution, for resources and efforts to help those in need. While short-term solutions are undoubtedly a must and will save millions of lives, long-term technology-based solutions are the ones that will reshape infrastructures, enable durable change, and could lead Africa and the entire world to a better and a more sustainable future.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
European News Bulletin.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Saeed Pourza. Our top story this hour. U.S. President Donald Trump has finally agreed to leave the White House peacefully on January 20th, but only after inciting a deadly attack on the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. Condemnation is pouring in from across the globe, and calls for the impeachment of a man in charge of the world's most powerful country are getting louder. More in this report by Bianca Rahimi.
U.S. President Donald Trump certainly seems bent on going out with a bang. After refusing to concede the election and riling up his supporters online and at his last rally, an angry mob stormed the Capitol building on Thursday.
Let's have trial by combat!
Five people were killed during the attack, including one female protester who was shot at point-blank range. When Trump was initially called upon to pacify his supporters, he stopped short of condemning the violence. However, hours later, he changed his tune, finally acknowledging he'll leave the White House peacefully after Congress affirmed his defeat and taking the opportunity to distance himself from the mob that attacked the Capitol building.
America is and must always be a nation of law and order. The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defiled the seat of American democracy. To those who engaged in the acts of violence and destruction, you do not represent our country. And to those who broke the law, you will pay.
Meanwhile, condemnations have poured in from around the world, even from those considered close allies and supporters of Trump.
Unreservedly condemn encouraging people to behave in the disgraceful way that they did in the Capitol. And all I can say is I'm very pleased that the president-elect has now been duly confirmed in office and that democracy has prevailed.
It is tragic that people lost their lives in the events of this night, but for me it is a sign of hope that the Congress continued its work that night. And now we also have the confirmation of the election victory of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. The United States of America will open, as it must, a new chapter in its democracy in less than 2 weeks.
Und das sind alles Themen, da steht, after 4 very barren years that we are leaving behind, we are now looking forward to 4 fruitful years of good cooperation.
Trump only has a few days left of his term, but it seems that's too long for some. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi described the president's actions as an unspeakable assault on the nation and its people, joining those calling for him to be impeached yet again. Bianca Rahimi, London.
All right, let's discuss that story a little further with political commentator Mick Napier, who joins me from the Scottish capital, Edinburgh. It's great to have you on the show. I guess we can begin by getting your reaction to the events of the past couple of days with the knowledge that the American president has just said that he won't be attending the Biden inauguration on January 20th.
It was inconceivable that he would be able to attend. He's a man who doesn't like to lose. But look, this monstrous figure who came onto the, who came into the presidency calling all Mexicans rapists, who called the white supremacists, the neo-Nazis marching in Charlottesville, fine people. It could only end in disaster. And what's interesting is that until the final disaster of the last few days, when I have been glammed onto my TV sets with millions of other people, how is it possible for so many people to support this creature? Not just the British Prime Minister, who at one time said that Donald Trump should be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, but the majority of the Republican Party, and so on and so on. Every success has 100 fathers, every failure is an orphan. While Trump seemed to be getting the support, amazing the number of people who supported him and who now, like rats, are deserting the good ship Trump. But it's not all been bad news, because when we look at what happened in Georgia, where white supremacists and racists have been the politically dominant faction, during this period, mobilization of voters by black and white people alike has turned the tables on these people.
Exactly.
And Georgia has come into it. So there's some good news. There's a lot of good news here, as well as this monstrous figure exiting from the stage.
And that Georgia
ignominy.
Victory was eclipsed, sort of, by the events in Washington D.C.,
yes.
But it is obviously good news. As you say, the fact of the matter is that more than 70 million people have voted for Trump on the November 4th elections, many of whom are convinced, thanks to Trump again, that the election was fraudulent. Now, Biden really does have his work cut out for him in bringing the country together. Whether or not can he do that?
I'm convinced that he can't. So many American people have an awareness, which this monstrous figure of Trump tapped into, but they have an awareness that the American political system is abysmally corrupt, that they do have the worst politicians that money can buy, and everything is up for negotiations in smoke-filled rooms. Not just the Israeli lobby, but every other lobby as well can buy politicians. It's very clear, very corrupt. So it was partly revulsion at this system which led many foolish people into the arms of Donald Trump. And by the way, they're not all white supremacists and neo-Nazis. Certainly Trump courted these people. But there's also a lot of people who have a great suspicion of the federal government for very good reason. No health service, cities of people living on the streets.
Right.
It's absolutely a shocking system.
Napier, one final question and your concisest answer. What do you think is going to be Trump's legacy?
Hatred, open racism. But it's also very difficult to tell, because I think Trump is about to be crushed by his opponents in the government. And what if he were successful, his legacy would be racism and hatred against foreigners. But it's difficult to see beyond the next couple of days, to be honest.
It sure is. Mick Napier, political commentator in Edinburgh, thank you.
This is European News Bulletin broadcast by IRIB English Radio. In this program, we cover the most recent developments all over Europe. You can listen to this program on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
Well, we're going to stay with the events in the U.S. Capitol and how they have revealed the way power works in the United States and for whom. We want to talk about that with our very own Richard Sedan. And Richard, one question you and I raised right at the outset was you look at those rioters and imagine how they would have been treated if they were black. And it turns out we're not the only ones asking that question.
Exactly. I mean, we've learned a few things from the incredible scenes in the capital over the last couple of days. And one of the things we've learned, as this headline shows, is white supremacy was on full display and there was a double standard seen in the police response. Now, a lot of people are making a connection, saying that, look, if these protesters were black or Muslim or both, they would have been treated completely differently. But we saw some interesting examples. There's one video of the police officer literally opening the gate, allowing scores of protesters in, many of them, of course, white supremacists. Now, I should say, of course, there were police who were, of course, doing their job and protecting the area, but we also saw a video, for example, of a police officer taking a protester, taking a selfie with a police officer. You know, these are unprecedented scenes. It's hard to imagine these protesters being treated in a different way if they were from a different demographic. I just want to bring up a couple of reactions on that point, if I can. Oscar says, the police would do next to nothing. They literally directed the white supremacists to Schumer's office. Coups happen because of the support of the military and the police. 84% of the police vote Trump. Overwhelmingly, the police helped this happen. And also on that point, MJ tweets, the police helped them storm the building. If the rioters were black, we'd have seen several dead bodies. Police were taking selfies with them. America is twisted. Read up on the Tulsa massacre and how the state gave white supremacists weapons to destroy a black Wall Street. Now, Saeed, one of the other major viral talking points videos was, of course, the shooting of one of the protesters, Ashley Babbitt.
Babbitt, Richard, a former Air Force veteran, apparently, trying to break into the main hall of the U.S. Congress, apparently.
Exactly, of 14 years. And actually, the scenes we saw there, I believe Mike Pence and other senior members of the government were beyond the barrier in the chamber there, which of course led to the shooting. A number of reactions to that video, which was circulating. Ruben on Twitter said, "Oh right, so shooting unarmed protesters is okay then. I wonder when the US will be lecturing other countries about that. One thing is for sure, the lecture won't be from the moral high ground any longer." And there's a lot of tweets making this connection between the image America likes to put forward and the scenes we've seen over the last few days. Another developing aspect of this story, Saeed, is other leaders condemning the scenes. And one thing I want to pick up on, actually, and a lot of people have mentioned this, Boris Johnson taking to his platform to condemn the scenes. Basically, a lot of people find the notion of Britain condemning, the undermining of democracy as highly hypocritical, because Britain has been involved with her allies, people would say, doing this around the world for many, many years. And so a lot of people are highly critical of Boris Johnson, and they see him as very similar to Donald Trump. Tom actually tweeted on this aspect of the story, and Tom says, the audacity of Boris Johnson to condemn the events in the US, the very Prime Minister who utilized the same tactics to divide and conquer the UK, all in pursuit of personal gain. Sickening,
sickening
hypocrisy.
And Richard, we're fresh out of time. We're going to have to leave it right there. Richard Sudan with that story. Richard, thank you as always. Time to look at some other stories now. China has refused calls from the European Union and the United Nations to release Hong Kong activists arrested on January 6th on charges of conspiring with external forces when it comes to internal affairs. More than 50 activists linked to violent unrest during the 2019 political protests were detained for questioning under the country's national security law. Authorities believe the activists helped run an unofficial primary to pick opposition candidates ahead of Hong Kong elections. Suspected foreign interference is thought to have played a significant role in 2019's upheaval, which inspired the country's national security law. The European Commission says it secured 300 million extra doses of the new Pfizer-BioNTech coronavirus vaccine after growing criticism that it had not done enough to secure jabs for the entire bloc. The EU now has the capacity to vaccinate 380 million people. That's more than 80% of the bloc's population. In total, 600 million vaccines will be available, the majority of them from April. In Germany, lawmakers have criticized the decision to give the Commission the handling of the vaccines for all member states. The World Health Organization has called on European countries to do more to curb a new variant of coronavirus first detected in the UK. The organization's regional director for Europe, Dr. Hans Klug, said that 22 countries in the region have detected the mutation in their COVID patients and that this is alarming. The new variant is said to be 70% more transmissible than its predecessors, making it more difficult to keep in check. Earlier this week, the UK reported its highest daily deaths and infections from the virus since the peak of the pandemic in April last year. Ukrainians have held Orthodox Christmas celebrations despite the pandemic and widely without masks and social distancing. The nation has reported more than 1 million cases and over 20,000 deaths. Yet the government placed no restrictions on Christmas festivities this year. People visited restaurants and Christmas markets without masks, although the government had announced it would be placing the country under a nationwide lockdown from January 8th. Reports have claimed that Britain is the least racist country in Europe, despite evidence from the government's own sources that institutional racism and racist attacks remain prominent in British life. Press TV's Richard Sudan asks if Britain really is the least racist country in Europe.
While many people do indeed argue that Britain is less of a racist country than others, the reality, according to experts on the ground like Lee Jasper, is a far cry from the image some would like Britain to have.
In the United Kingdom, we have more inter-ethnic, inter-religious cohabitations and marriages than any other place in the world. But when you look at the scale of institutionalized racism and systemic disadvantage, then we compare with America or some other countries around the world where racism and its institutional character is much more profound.
We have a big feeling of entitlement in Britain as it is as a culture. So to say that Britain is the least racist country in the world, I believe that's another cover-up story that they always tend to try to put on this country and even around Europe, around racism, to try and cover up the reality that you still are very racist in your views towards people of other cultures.
While many are quick to point the finger at street racism, many more are making the connection between institutional and structural racism and power as the real issue.
In fact, what we've seen on average is two immigration bills being introduced every single year since 2020. And so we're just ratcheting up, making it more difficult, making more hostile immigration legislation to the extent now where, you know, we're deporting black British citizens to countries that they've never ever been to and have no association with.
To talk about immigrants in such a way, to talk about people, human beings that need help, and come here, a country you keep promoting to the world, because I've been around the world, I've lived in other countries, and I've heard their perception of Britain. They look at Britain as a haven, as like almost like a safe place from the problems that exist in the world that are killing people. So when they come here, they see the farce.
For many communities, and especially young black people, the police remain one of the main reasons as to why Britain is not the anti-racist utopia that many try to frame Britain's image around.
They've come to understand very quickly that they're third-class citizens living in a supposed first-class democracy, and that, as we've seen just this week, with the announcement that 9 out of 10 young people in youth offenders establishments in the United Kingdom are BME offenders. 61% of them are black. The rest are made up of Muslim and other ethnic minorities. I mean, that is a catastrophic figure.
They haven't helped. They've made the problem worse. When you put more police on the streets searching more black young people, you've got to understand causality, you know. Action, reaction, action, reaction. It's going to keep going on and on until people go to war.
While many would argue progress has been made, the reality of racism in Britain for those experiencing it, the number of racist attacks shown by police's own figures, and the systemic disparities in housing, healthcare and employment and so on, paints a very different picture indeed.
Well, two stories lined up for this segment. First, the gruesome murder of 11 minors from Pakistan's Persian-speaking Shia Hazara community in the country's Balochistan province, condemnation of the Prime Minister Imran Khan's reaction. Well, let's bring in Robert Carter to give us the details on the ground and also the reaction online. Robert, good evening.
Good evening, Saeed. Well, thank you very much for introducing the subject as well as you did. Obviously, this story has been in the news and on social media for a couple of days now. But the latest reaction that I can bring you is a speech made by the Prime Minister Imran Khan, who has caused absolute outrage since issuing it. He appears to have accused the families and the protesters, the Shia protesters, of blackmailing him into trying to get him to go and visit the region following the attack. Now, just to clarify, he has made clear that he condemns the incident and so on, but this unusual statement comes after several days of renewed protest by the region, where, of course, the Prime Minister has yet to visit and offer his condolences in person. We actually have a snippet of speech which has caused so much outrage. Perhaps we'll play that now and see what the Prime Minister had to say.
I sent them a message saying we met all your demands, and in addition you are demanding that the Prime Minister should come before they're buried. This is just like blackmailing the Prime Minister. If this happens, everyone will start blackmailing the Prime Minister. I told them as soon as the burial is over, I will visit Quetta and meet the grieving family.
That must have ruffled a lot of feathers, Robert.
It did, Saeed, especially on social media, so perhaps I'll bring you some of your reaction now. I've gone for the more moderate responses, just obviously to be as fair as I possibly can to the subject. Let's bring the first tweet up and see what was said. It was from a user, Shabir, who's tweeting from Pakistan. They said that Imran Khan just said that the Hazaras are blackmailing him to visit. Shias, the next time you have to vote, remember it. Remember it well. The next tweet I have, again, bringing more criticism to Imran Khan here, to the professor, who says, our Prime Minister has achieved a new low today. The most insensitive statement by a person who lacks the basic concept of empathy. Being a Prime Minister doesn't make you above the people. And the third and final tweet I can bring you on this, again, more unfriendly comments saying to the Prime Minister. It says here that so the people who have lost their whole families for no reason are now blackmailers only because they demand their head of state to condone them. So obviously, difficult situation for the Prime Minister. I suspect he'll be doing a little bit of damage control
going forward. Let's quickly move on to your second story, Rob, and please keep it to two tweets if you can. And this one on the Israeli Prime Minister blaming the third lockdown in the occupied territories on the variant, the new variant of COVID here in the UK.
Absolutely. So the Israeli regime's prime minister has referred to it as the British mutation, which he claims is behind the latest spike in cases there. So obviously, this is, of course, following on from other media outlets who have referred to this new strain as the British virus. So it seems as if we're now seeing, rather than it being known as the China virus, a term coined by US President Donald Trump, it's now being referred to as the British virus or the British munition. But also what I want to mention in the quick time I have is that ultimately the Israeli regime has been criticized for other things too, like the fact that they're not allowing or handing out, distributing the vaccine to Palestinians, even Palestinians living in the occupied territories, which are currently being administered by the Israeli regime and their forces. And this is from a regime which claims that it's not an apartheid regime, but this, of course, is the latest example to suggest, well, actually, it is. And this has been noticed online. So very quickly, the first tweet I have, it should be from Zainab. It's Zainab says, and again, deafening silence across the world on Israel's inhumane decision. The illegal Zionist state also said it would exclude Palestinian prisoners from being vaccinated. And then the final tweet, let's bring that up now and see what was said. Again, criticism of the Israeli regime here from Nuruddin, who says, it is there in their law to be kind to Israelites only. This is absurd. And what Islam teaches is for us to be kind to every person, no matter what their religion. So comparing the beautiful religion of Islam, which is there to help people, and the Israeli regime, which is out to get people, especially if you're a Palestinian.
Precisely. Robert Carter. Robert, thank you. All right, our time is literally up. Thanks for joining us, and goodbye.
in the limelight.
Twitter has permanently suspended the account of President Donald Trump, citing its repeated violations of the company's rules and risk, including the further incitement of violence. Twitter assessed two tweets sent by Trump on Friday morning, 8th of January, as highly likely to encourage and inspire people to replicate the criminal acts that took place on the U.S. Capitol on 6th of January 2021, the company said in a statement. Plans for future armed protests are spreading on Twitter and elsewhere, the company warned, including a proposed secondary attack on the U.S. Capitol building and state capitol buildings on 17th of January 2021. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalists Julia Carey Wong and Carrie Paul. The piece is titled, Twitter Permanently Suspend Trump's Account to Prevent Further Incitement of Violence. Stay with us for more of Julia Carey Wong and Carrie Paul's article. Twitter has permanently suspended the account of President Donald Trump, citing its repeated violations of the company's rules and risks.